Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Hi.
Here's John Williams.
I'm over here. We're in the Allstate Skyline studio. This is John Williams. We are here until 3 today. And Saturdays, I'm on from 10 to noon. This Saturday, we're going to be at Sox Fest. Listen, and if you're going to be there, make sure you stop by and say hi. We're at Sox Fest this weekend on social media. You can find me as WGN King John. Now I got to go away. Coming over here. Stand by. Picking up some pieces of paper. One of the papers I was going to use for the show today were over there. Now they're over here. Let me see if I make sure I got the right ones. It's not like I didn't have all day to prepare this part of the show. We're right out of the gates, and I do not have that script in front of me. Ah! Oh, well! This isn't a very promising way to start the show, and I think it's going to be a pretty good show. Phil Vitale, the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune, is going to say hi. Restaurant Week is right around the corner. He's also got a review of a restaurant in the paper today. We'll talk a little bit about that. And we'll also visit with a business columnist from the LA Times. His name is David Lazarus, and he wrote a piece about why your glasses are so expensive. I just the other day went to one of the eye shops in town to get glasses. And we have insurance here, so I thought, okay, I think I've got $130 for frames, and then there's copays, and everybody has their own programs. But we've got decent eye insurance, I was told. But by the time I got out the door, I was $500 thinner than when I walked in. And I just thought, why are these things so expensive? And I knew it was going to be that way. You know, I have the blended lenses so that, because, you know, I need help seeing near and far, so I can't just get one prescription. I've got to get two, so they kind of blend it in there so you don't have a line, so that's a cost. And then they look at you and say, well, if you're going to spend that much money on these lenses, you'd better get that scratch-resistant stuff, or you might as well just throw your money down the drain. I'm like, yeah, all right, I should get the scratch-resistant stuff too. And then I should get them buffed on the edges because the vision, the lenses are so thick, you want to get them sort of fixed on the sides and it'll be a little lighter.
Oh, yeah, you want the edge buff.
And, you know, I actually got the frames Z-barded. Was that a good idea?
So by it would have been in the 70s.
Really? So by the time I got out of there, each decision point seemed to be prudent on my part, you know? Like, why spend $100 stupidly? You really should go $150 and then make sure that the $100 is a good sound investment. Well, if you're going to go $150, you really need the 2.25. And by the way, the $500 setup I got wasn't even the most expensive option. At one point, I said, stop. Is this a bad sign? As I was walking out of the shop, they were all giving each other high fives.
Ooh. Yeah.
So that was my day. And there was this piece in the LA Times, and it said, how come your glasses are so expensive, comma, dummy? Actually, it's not me. It's you, too. That's just the way it is out there. And they said there's this company that has a monopoly on glasses and frames worldwide. Pearle Vision, Target, name any of those franchise eyeglass shops. They're all owned by the same company.
Is there any really good eye insurance, though?
Yeah, that's a good question.
You know,
that's a good question. I mean, there is eye insurance, and there's better insurance than other insurance, but is there any eye insurance where you go in and they go, okay, $100, I don't know, whatever. They said that the cost of the materials and the glasses on your nose is like $10. It's it's like nothing.
Can I just put in a plug for a former guest on my show, a company called State Optical?
This sounds so in your wheelhouse, Steve.
And they're local. They're, I think, in Mundelein or Lincolnshire.
Yeah.
And they're the only Chicago or Illinois-based eyeglass manufacturing company. Now, they're higher end.
Oh.
They're not bargain. They're custom made. And
I'm all, I'm all for value, and I think I got good glasses, and I like my frames that are plastic. I didn't get anything. I didn't get titanium. You know, I mean, I thought I was cutting some costs on the frames. You know, Warby Parker is not in our network. I said, I'll do Warby Parker. They go, sure you will, and it'll all be you. I'm like, all right. And by the way, Warby Parker, if you do it right, by the time you get done, it's still not cheap, cheap, cheap. And we have done this for a number of other things where sort of the market says, yeah, you know, we can do it for less than that. But not so much eyeglasses. Why is it that way? $235. That's not what I paid for the frames. That's the time that the guests will be on. I would have been happy to pay $235. I was actually thinking, I'm going to get out of here for a couple. I'm going to get out of here for south of $300.
Are they the glasses you're currently wearing?
No.
Oh, because when I saw you earlier, I was thinking those glasses look great on him.
Well, then maybe I don't need to get new glasses.
Save yourself $500.
I'd ask a couple of other people, John.
Thank you, Steve. He's so candid with John on the radio. Mary Jane, you're on the air. What did you want to say? Hello.
Thank you. Yes. First, I went to Walmart and got my glasses there about 2 or 3 years ago, and their frames are like from $29 to $59. And this time I went to Costco, and I have Vera Wang frames for like $89. So just, you have to shop around. You have to really shop around. Of course, so, I had my own prescription from my own doctor.
Well, I have my own prescription. Okay, I did. I had my own prescription, so I didn't need them to, you know, measure my eyes or
correct.
Anything.
Correct.
But you got correct. New lenses and new frames out the door for $89.
And sunglasses, bifocal sunglasses.
Oh, you're killing me here.
And my bill was in $300.
Wow.
Gosh. Do I make you feel bad?
Terrible. But here's the other thing. I like the frames that I have. Sometimes I've gone, like the ones I have on my face now that I got at Target.
Mm-hmm.
Are fine, mm-hmm. but I don't love them. So sometimes that's mm-hmm. that's on me. I could have probably gotten frames I didn't think were stylish enough for less, right? So that's on me too.
Mm-hmm.
That's me.
Correct. But I wanted black frames, and I found a Vera Wang black frames that I bought at Costco.
Good for you. Well, mm-hmm. thanks for the heads up on that.
Anytime, John. Thank you. Love your show.
I love your help. I just wish you'd called yesterday.
If I didn't have to shop anywhere besides Costco, I wouldn't.
You love your Costco experience?
Love it.
Really? You get everything there?
Pretty much.
I saw an article yesterday. That's not where the Kirkland brand is sold, is it?
It yes. is.
So it was 10 Kirkland products you must buy right now. I clicked through about 3 of them and then I got tired. But like the Kirkland vodka, folks love that. The Kirkland cocoa mix, they loved that. I'm trying to think of some of the things. But a lot of things, those are brand names sold under their label, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you can get Fry boots or Lucky Brand jeans. I'm wearing Calvin Klein jeans from Costco right now.
And you're rocking them.
Thank you. But yeah, they have a lot of great products.
Yeah.
I have only had one pair of glasses my whole life, and I don't wear them because I hate them now. I used to love them, and so I've had them since high school, and I just neglected them. So I went recently in May when I had an eye situation, and I had to get my eyes checked anyway. So I found a pair for $100. They were like Vogue brand or something. Like
really?
Vogue Junior or whatever brand it was.
So those are the frames?
Yeah.
And then lenses, what were you out the door?
It was $100.
For everything?
I think it maybe $120.
Hokey
yeah, with
smokes.
My insurance.
I walked into the, well, Elifton, I did it wrong. I don't know.
And it's really close to where you and I live.
Really? Because I walked, I mean, you and I live like 100 yards from each other. I walked over to Southport. Was it off Southport or was it on Broadway?
It's where Clark and Broadway meet.
Clark.
Lens Crafters.
And Broadway meet. Yeah, and Lens Crafters is owned by this giant international pan-global monopolistic company. The point of the article was they could be doing it for even less than they are. I'm happy for you. I'm happy for our last caller. I walked into the place and I told the lady, I want to look like Joe Madden. You know, doesn't Joe Madden sort of have a big, bold, plastic, black frame that's kind of cool? And so she said, okay, let's look at some, you know, big, bold, plastic, black frames. And I thought, that can't be expensive. It's just a bunch of plastic. Why is this plastic plastic lenses so expensive?
He looks like he's one step from having the adhesive tape holding him together in the middle.
They look kind of, they're so damn dorky, they're good. I mean, I don't want Harry Carey glasses. I want Joe Madden glasses. That was the look I was going for. They were going for the look where when I walk out, they all give each other a high five. They turn the sign over that says closed, and they pop champagne. They were suddenly celebrating, though, after I left. Donna, you're on WGN Radio. Hello, how can you help us?
When I had my grandson, he used to break his glasses all the time, so the eye doctor says go to Zinni.com. They're cheap enough for the kid if he loses them, whatever. I've been buying glasses there for years. I go to the eye doctor at Wheaton Eye Clinic. He gives me my prescription. I call them, or I can go online. They even give you similar faces that you can kind of try them on. They have designer. They have plastic. Anything that you want. And they're inexpensive. You can call them and they'll help you measure everything.
How about that?
My single lens, I got a design. I like plastic, but I got a pair of just to watch the TV, and they're cute. I've gotten so many compliments on for $20 complete.
Zenni. Zenni.com.
Zenni.com.
All right. I'm really glad you called. Thanks for the heads up on that, Donna.
Sure. Bye bye.
Bye now. Hey, Jim, you're on WGN Radio. Hi, Jim.
Hello?
Hey, you're on the air. Hi, Jim. Hey, Jim.
Yeah, hi. This is Jim.
Yep, that's you, buddy. You're on the radio.
Okay. I was in the lady a couple calls ago. She told you to look around. That's true. There's that, you ever see the advertisement of the All-American Eyeglass Company?
All-American Eyeglass Company?
You get two pairs for $175. And they're good.
Is that in a store or is that online?
Yeah, it's in a store. It's called, you ever see on TV, it's an owl. He's got glasses on. It's called All American.
Yeah, glass company. All right.
And they advertise cheap glasses.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I don't have.
Google All American Eyeglass.
I am on that, Jim. Thank you for the call. Thank you for the heads up. Again, this is all real helpful information maybe to you, but I've kind of missed the boat on this. I can't wait for my eyes to get worse or me to lose my glasses because I'm going to go to some of these other places. And did truth be told, the company that I went to here in Chicago on Southport is just could not have been nicer. In fact, I think that's one of the reasons that I actually felt good walking out of the store. There's something to be said about customer service, positivity, telling you about the extra things they'll do for you. If over the course of a couple of years you lose them or they break, they'll replace them. Or I mean, there was other features, and they were just so positive and nice and helpful. And every time, and this, I don't know if this will surprise you or not, but here was my experience. Every pair of frames I tried on, they said looked pretty good on me.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, you know, I had all of that going for me. And that was even with their discount. So there's that.
How much do you say you spend a year on
eyewear?
Yeah, on eyewear.
Well, you know, I don't make that purchase every year. Like the glasses that I'm wearing so attractively today, I bought like 3 years ago maybe, you know. So hopefully these will last me a few more years. That's the other thing. Glasses do get banged up over the course of a year.
Or chewed up by a puppy.
Right, I know. So you almost hesitate to spend a lot of money on them because you think, well, these things are going to get... It's sort of like iPhones. There was a time where your computer, your laptop, your any of your devices, you'd spend a lot of money on thinking, okay, now I'm good. I've got an iPhone. I've got a computer. And now we're all trained that after, what, 2 years?
It's like obsolete.
You don't want, if your phone is too thick, oh my God, don't show the neighbors. If you've got something that, if there's a 3 or 4 anywhere near your iPhone, just keep it in the drawer. You know, sneak it like a chocolate. Make a quick call, check a text, if you can even, and then put it back in the drawer. Don't let them see that. Shame! The shame of those things. Yesterday on the beginning of this program, we talked a little bit about what was going on at Covington Catholic, and I asked you to at least keep your minds, hearts, and heads open to the possibility that your thoughts about what happened at Covington Catholic at first are, in fact, not what happened there. The debate continues to rage, and I'm not going to try and change anybody's mind today about this, but I do have some advice for the parents of the Covington Catholic kids. And here it is. Hey, parents of the Covington kids. The 24/7 news cycle eats stories like this for a living. Close your doors. And the media monster will find something else to consume. The shutdown, the wall, all things Trump and Pelosi, the NFL, the weather, R. Kelly, the Oscars. You get the idea. We will go away. Or you can go on the Today Show, and you can hire PR firms and engage in the debate. It is really tempting to explain yourself. I know you want to vindicate yourself, but you can't win. You'll get your point out. You'll find sympathy. Savannah will be nice, but you'll also harden other hearts, and more videos and judgments will come out too. Today, a woman posted an 8-second video of what it was like for her to walk by that group of Covington teens before their meeting with the Native Americans and the Black Hebrew Israelites. The video has been viewed over 12 million times.
I'm so tired already.
It's hard to tell exactly what they are saying in the video, but she has just walked by them. They're sitting on a park bench. She's maybe 20 feet away now, and they are still looking at and yelling at her. She looks to be about 20 years old. She's blonde. She has a pretty face, and as she walks by them, she gets...
I'm so tired already.
There's a lot not to like about these kids. However, it is still likely that they were mischaracterized at the rally. Our first introduction to them gave a false impression, I say, that they were the ones that initiated the mocking of Nathan Phillips and his associates. Today, we know that seems more complicated. But the truth of what happened that day doesn't matter. The reality is that the longer they stay in the public eye, the worse it is going to get. Quick, name a Catholic high school outside of Chicago. Maybe you can think of one. I'll bet you can't think of one except theirs, and that's not good for them. So even a sympathetic interview with Savannah Guthrie is not going to help. Images of the Covington students in black at a basketball game are gathering analysis and debate. There really is no end to the many ways to turn this story over. The best option for you folks is to stop and close your doors. And don't come on my show or Fox and Friends or Today or SNL. Fire your PR team. Change your phone number if you have to. I'm sure it's awful for you right now. One day you are an unknown entity with happy, healthy kids. And the next thing you know, you're the focus of a ferocious national debate. But here in 2019, you can't blow back hard enough. You have to wait for the storm to pass. Close your doors. We'll go away. It's my advice to the parents. They will not be taking it. Think about that, too. Kids go, I mean, never mind the wisdom of the kids wearing political hats at a, you know, unborn rights rally or whatever the thing was, the right to life or the what was it called? The support life rally. The parents send the kids off, and they love their kids, and they're going to school, and I'm sure they have nothing but positive feelings for their children the way you and I do our own. And 24 hours later, this, you know, the name of the school, you'll never run away from that. That class, those kids, the association, it's just so toxic, and that's consuming you now. And the only way to make it go away quicker is to just don't go on the Today Show. Have you seen the stuff that's come out since then? It's 126 on WGN Radio. Steve Bertrand's going to do the news. Phil Vitale, the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune, is going to come into our studio. We'll talk a little bit about some of the restaurants in the area. He's got some good reviews. Restaurant Week is right around the corner. Phil's got some things to say about that. And I'll ask Phil what he thinks about the Sweethearts candy. You know those little Sweethearts candies that you get at Valentine's Day? Don't you love those? Did you get those as kids? Did you give those as kids? I still love those. That company went out of business. They are no longer, they say, available. Where you find them at great markup right now, which is just such a sad thing. Okay, Phil Vitale, you're next. Thank you for all of that, Steve. We should almost play back the part of the show yesterday where I guessed the temperature. It's a skill I have called triangulation, lost
please, let's not do that.
A lot of people. And yesterday, while we had temperatures like 29, 30, 28 in the metro area, and then you threw Racine at me, and out of the blue, I nailed it. And it was like 5 degrees off. But if you triangulate and understand the concept of triangulation, you can know the temperatures without even being there. And it was really just a great moment for me, and I know my family and all of our listeners yesterday. Well, here it is, 1:39 now on WGN. Phil Vitale's the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune.
Before
Hi, Phil.
Before you do that, John,
yes, Steve?
Can I read you a letter from the Speaker of the House?
Here's Nancy Pelosi saying what?
To the president, and I'm just seeing it myself, but I understand what the meaning is. When I extended an invitation on January 3rd for you to deliver the State of the Union address, it was on a mutually agreed upon date, January 29th. At that time, there was no thought that the government would still be shut down. In my further correspondence of January 16th, I said we would work together to find a mutually agreeable date when the government is reopened, and I hope that we can still do that. I'm writing to inform you that the House of Representatives will not consider a concurrent resolution authorizing the president's State of the Union address in the House chamber until the government is opened. So the president earlier today saying, I'm responding to your first invitation, not your second letter.
Yeah, right.
I'll be there for the address. The speaker now saying that they will not entertain him.
So they're setting up a literal physical confrontation, him trying to get into the house.
A wall, if you will.
Don't laugh or he'll just do that more. So think about that, though. She did invite him. Does she get to uninvite him? I noticed originally that he had said rescinded and I didn't follow the train of thought there. I thought that she had at first said, let's talk about it, and then no invitation was extended. In fact, she did extend the invitation. I'm telling you, this is the sort of thing kindergarten teachers have to solve all of the time. So what's in play now? The invitation or I guess
she is saying that he will not, that the house won't be open. She is in charge of whether or not there are people sitting in the house.
Yeah, but he has an Air Force. Right? I mean, you think about it. If push came to shove, and I'm not putting it past these people.
Yeah, well, with both, I'd send in the Marines, to be honest with you.
She's got a guy with a sword and a hat, and he's got the Navy, so I like his chances.
Yeah,
but as
well,
a measure of protocol, do you want to go to a location that doesn't want you? If you know, okay,
right.
You know what the temperature in the room is.
Exactly.
Don't go there.
Well, you know that half the room or
half of the room will be accommodating. But the Senate would afford him an invitation.
Sure.
He can speak from his living room. I still think the 18th at Mar-a-Lago is available. Mm-hmm. He could speak from wherever he wants. I did see this week that, in fact, Sarah Sanders said that the president is planning on next Wednesday delivering an address, location to be determined.
We just don't know which address.
But will he try and strong-arm the situation now?
Sorry, Mr. Trump, I don't see your name on the list.
Well, by one measure that he's fond of citing, the ratings
Vitale's
will be
really
very good.
Looking at reservation lists. In
this. That's right. Check again. I'm shooting Melania plus one. I think I'm in there.
Melania plus one?
Yeah. That's my rap name, plus one. So then when I go into clubs, I say, no, I'm pretty sure I'm on the list. Check it out.
You done now, too? Because
probably not.
I don't want to do this. Phil Vitale is a restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune. His review today is of Nahabedians.
Yes, Brandy.
You know, you and I have been toying with the idea of one day doing a, I don't know if it's a trivia quiz for you, maybe we should just list restaurants in Chicago and you tell us about, in a sentence, their history and their name. Why is Nahabedians named that?
Brandy is a French term for a small growth off a twig on a tree. It represents, so it's the little thing that first pokes up when it's going to probably become a new branch, whatever, is called a Brandy. And so when they opened this as their second restaurant 6 years ago, it represented new growth.
Okay, but you said Brandy.
Brandy.
But this is Nahabedians. What does Brandy have to do with Nahabedian?
Brandy is the name of the restaurant, and the Nahabedians are Carrie and Michael Nahabedian, who are the chef and general manager, respectively.
Oh, I see. But the name of the restaurant isn't Brandy.
Yes.
Oh, it is?
It is.
Oh, it's the Nahabedians.
Led Renaissance, you're right.
Got it. Is there a restaurant called Nahabedians?
No, but there was Naha, and that's what it was. It was short for Nahabedian.
Got it. The stories behind these are fun, Phil. So tell us a little bit about Brandy.
Brandy is, when they opened it, they still had Naha, which was very, very American, kind of Carrie's California cooking merged with her Armenian heritage and things like that. And Brandy is her and his, their cousins, salute to France. They're just doing classic French cooking, certainly was part of her early training, and they just do a terrific job. And 5-10 years ago, French cooking was kind of sort of over in many people's minds. But in the last couple of years, we've seen a bit of a resurgence, and certainly few restaurants do it better than this one.
The food section of the Chicago Tribune today is just terrific, by the way. The photography, I was actually looking at it. I took a picture of the roasted vegetable baked pasta for your party buffet and recipe and sent it to my wife and said, "Hokey smokes, does this look like something for you?" But then when you turn the page, you also see the more pictures from the food that they serve. The Dover sole just looks positively delicious. What was the highlight for you? What were you really enjoying?
I really like this thing called a tartatin of potatoes. No, tartatin is typically apples, but they did a kind of this thin shaved potatoes with the caramelized onions and goat cheese, a little herb de Provence for aroma, walnuts, little rocket greens, which is wild arugula, and pumpkin seeds. It's just a beautiful little dish when you're just sitting there saying, "Oh, I'm having potatoes and cheese," and but there's so much else going on texturally and visually. And I agree, the Dover sole is just one of those fish that if they're really sourcing it from Europe as they should, and they're really just all you got to do is dress it with a little brown butter. But of course, this being Carina Abedian, there are whole almonds and Parisian potatoes, little fried lemon on top, little capers on the side.
You also wrote cured and crisped pork belly. Plays against a fruit assortment of poached cranberries and gooseberries, along with, what's that word, medjool dates puree, a dates puree, soft trophy noodles.
Yeah, those are little twisted pastas, about finger length.
Serve as a foil for lump crab meat, buttered kohlrabi and lobster coral butter, under a sheaf of chafed black truffles. Okay, I don't know what all of that is, but boy, that sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Noodles, crab meat, pork, crisp, belly, man.
Yeah, it's very buttery, very rich, and then you've got this lobster roe for a little hint of salt, and then, of course, black, you know, quote, summer truffles, unquote. This time of year, they can source them from Australia, where it's summer, and they get summer truffles that way.
Wow. Okay, what's the room like at this place?
Very, very subdued. Kind of earth tones, a little on the darker side, some nice, cute globe lights, but they're not super dim, but just all the lighting you need and no more. It's a pretty quiet room. You've got your double cloth topped on the tablecloths, on the tables. You've got these beautiful pictures of bare tree branches as part of the theme that are
backlit. Oh, yeah, right.
Backlit.
I'm looking at that now, too.
And it is, as people always say, where can I go for a meal that's really nice, but it's quiet? Please give me quiet. This place is quiet.
55 seats. You write conversation friendly rather than mm-hmm. conversation challenged, which you too often have to put.
Mm-hmm.
It's at 534 North Clark, so that's downtown, right? That's
right.
Right over here.
Just a half block north of the of where Naha used to be.
And you give it 3 stars,
yeah.
Phil Vitale. That's something you don't throw around lightly. Brindle, Brindille, Leeds French comeback. You've been saying that we're actually getting some decent French restaurants in this little Midwestern town of ours.
Yeah, I mean, we always had the Everest, we always had the Le Nomade, but the days of when Jean Blanchet was heads and above the only chef everybody knew about in Chicago, then it became more of an American thing, and our American food is incorporating more and more Latino influence. So the trending in cuisine is going to wane, and we're getting into way more Korean flavors, a lot more Asian flavors in general. But now French is starting to swing a little bit back. We had the restaurant Le Sud up in Roscoe Village that does a really nice job, and it's just so cute. It looks like it was pulled out of a time capsule.
But is this accessible? Do you think most folks would enjoy this? I mean, is it too fancy, or is it okay?
I don't think so. I mean, Carrie Mahabedian's food is undeniably complex. There's a lot of ingredients on the plate, but it's a far cry from the old French cliche of, you know, a lot of meat with a lot of butter sauce and just some luxury accents for the sake of being luxury accents. And she doesn't play, her style is much cleaner, offers a lot different textures and all that. And yeah, I mean, some of what we now accept automatically, you know, that we use different, we incorporate spicy peppers into certain dishes and all the rest of it. We weren't doing that at all 20 years ago. This is actually a fairly recent development in the way Americans eat, at least.
500 block of North Clark downtown. Let's pause here for a minute. It's 1:49. Talk to me about Restaurant Week, which is...
starts Friday.
Yeah, I was just going to say, next week, essentially, but it starts Friday, right?
Starts Friday, goes for 2 weeks, which is, you can ask yourself why they're calling it Restaurant Week instead of Restaurant Weeks.
That's all right, we get it.
Restaurant Half Month, something.
All right, let's give some highlights from that in a minute here on WGN. Phil Vitale, give me 60 seconds. We procrastinate on a lot of things, even managing the pain in our knees. I'm John Williams, and I talk about the Joint Relief Institute a lot, and I just know that a lot of us are kind of limping around, maybe gingerly walking, period, and then when there's ice and snow under your feet, now it's really perilous, and I just don't want you to do that. I want you to be proactive, stop suffering from pain, stop worrying about your slipping on the ice and snow. Let's have strong and pain-free joints. Go to the Joint Relief Institute. They use digital imaging. They see where your knee's been failing you. There's a spot. And then they put some joint lubricant into there. It'll take more than one treatment, but I'm telling you, this is pain-free. It's outpatient. It's non-surgical. It's quick. You're in, you're out, and your insurance is almost surely going to pay for it. So let's get on that right now. Their new location is in Oak Brook, just east of the Oak Brook Mall off of Cermak. It's easy to get to. Maybe the Orland Park location's better for you. It's the same phone number either way. You ready? 708-888-0000, as in zero pain. That's the Joint Relief Institute. Visit jointreliefinstitute.com or call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain. So Phil Vitale and I, restaurant critic, Chicago Tribune, we're talking off the air, on the air now. It was your idea for Restaurant Week.
Sort of, yeah. I had about 13, 14 years ago, I wrote a rant in the paper saying, you know, Sarasota has a restaurant week, for crying out loud. How come we don't have a restaurant week? New York's got one. Washington has one. And LA's got one. So we need something like that. And I said something in the paper about exactly how those other ones were structured. And it would be an easy format to copy, and volunteered to check out the Miami Restaurant Week, which is coming up the following month. But
oh, that was your gambit. Okay,
that was my
gambit. It.
Yeah, they didn't rise to that bait. But the next time they met, the city council started a subcommittee to look into it. And a year after that, we had our very first Restaurant Week, and there were 35 restaurants that joined in that very first
when
year.
When you join in, you participate by offering maybe special prefix meals, something like that, right?
Right. You offer lunch and or dinner. You can do one or both. And you put the menu together as you want, and some places just do one set menu. It's back then it was $22 for lunch and more than that for dinner. It's now jumped all the way up to 24, but that's not bad for 12 years that the price of lunch has gone up only $2.
Is that uniform with all the restaurants? Same price?
Yeah, you have to stick to the price. For lunch, you do a lunch or brunch. Some do weekend brunch for this too, and it's $24. And then dinner is either $36 or $48. Typically, the $36 menu is a three-course and the $48 is a four, but that's not always. It's not universal.
What about beverage service on those?
Always extra.
Yeah.
Actually, I take it back. One restaurant, ABBA, is throwing in a glass of wine with its
dinner. Huh?
Yeah. They're not open for lunch.
Okay.
So their $48 dinner menu includes a glass of wine. So you get
how many restaurants are participating this year?
Almost 400.
Wow.
There were like three. The last count they were saying it was 390.
Starting this Friday.
Starting Friday and going for 2 weeks to Feb 7.
What do you make of this? Is it a good idea? Should I try and get in? Can I get in?
It's a great way to motivate people to go out to dinner at the time of year when the weather is not exactly luring people outdoors. So there's a reason to go to the place. And some of these places you can go in and have dinner for less than you're going to pay. Brandy, which we were just talking about, they're doing it. And they're doing a dinner for $48, I believe. Yeah. And it's a three-course dinner. And if you go there in 2 weeks from now and they're back to the regular menu, you're not going to get three courses for $48.
Yeah.
And if you go there tonight, you're not going to get three courses for $48. But starting Friday, you will.
Yeah.
So you get to check out a restaurant for less than you'd ordinarily pay. And hopefully, they're hoping this will make you into a repeat customer.
Well, I want to support the concept, and I suspect you do too. But I wonder if it's like going out on Valentine's Day now. Are the restaurants crowded? Can they handle it? What's the story there?
I think so. For one thing, if they were that packed, they probably wouldn't feel the need to get in there. Although, to be honest with you, ABBA is that packed. But this isn't going to make it worse. It can only because it's a waiting list to get into ABBA anyway. I think most the appeal for most of the restaurants is that this is not their busy time of year.
Yeah.
And it's not like Valentine's Day when everybody's trying to get in there at the exact same moment and have the exact same fancy dinner. And, you know, Valentine's Day is its own, you know, little bit of hell for the restaurant community. But
yeah, right. But a good kind of problem for them to have, too. I mean, better that people go out than that they don't.
If they behave. Valentine's Day, the people or the restaurants? The people. Valentine's Day is notorious for people not showing up.
Oh.
You know, Mr. Romance makes reservations at 3 restaurants and gives his lovely would-be date her choice. And they go to the one they like, and maybe he forgets to call the other two.
I make reservations at more than one location sometimes, and I always call back right away when we've secured the reservation at the other place. And you have never heard a more appreciative voice on the other end of the phone.
I know. I've been thanked profusely when I've called.
I know.
Embarrassed because I'm calling with maybe 5 hours notice, less, and saying, I'm so sorry, my wife is sick, I can't. And they say, look, thanks, just thank you for letting us know.
Amen to that. And, you know, what you're doing is you're telling them, I'm not going to give you my money today. And they sound thrilled, which is shows you how important that call is. Phil Vitale writes in the Chicago Tribune, read him at chicagotribune.com/dining. They have this paper edition. I recommend you pick up today because it's beautiful. It looks delicious. Restaurant Week starts on Friday. I got to go, Phil. Is there a website to go to for Restaurant Week?
There is. It is eatitupchicago.com.
Eatitupchicago.com. Thank you, Phil Vitale. It's nice to see you in the studio.
My pleasure.
You all right?
I'm great.
Okay. You look a little distracted over there.
I was trying to find my place in this piece of paper, and I just kind of couldn't focus.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Well,
here's John Williams.
If it were a competition, it'd be easy to win these days. I'm thinking of what's going on in Washington, D.C. Good grief. Hey, it's John Williams. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We'll be here until 3 o'clock today. Saturdays, 10 to noon on all social media, WGN King John. I posted a monologue about what happened at Covington with a relevant soundbite today, different than the one yesterday. A lot of you commented on yesterday's. We have part 2 of that today, but never mind all of that. I got to tell you, Steve, are we doing the thing this year where every time you say, I can't believe it, that you have to put a dollar in the bucket, and then at the end of the year we have a Christmas party?
I still have kids in college, so I can't afford to do that this year.
Maybe we'll take the money in the bucket, and you could send your kids to Yale.
Right.
Because, you know, I find myself about Nancy Pelosi and Donald Trump today going, oh, you've got to be kidding me, you guys. Really? Wait, I got to put a dollar in the bucket. Even a nickel in the bucket. It's just amazing to me.
So I don't remember the exact story, but the Cuban Missile Crisis, remember when Khrushchev sent 2 letters to Kennedy, and the second one was more firm than the first, and the Kennedy administration decided to pretend they didn't get it.
Oh, wow.
And that's how it all got diffused. That's my recollection anyway. I'm sure I could be wrong. But anyway, that's what Donald Trump seemed to do here. He ignored the second letter and accepted the invitation for the first.
Okay, right? But I have the letter from January 16th in front of me.
That's the second letter, I think.
Which begins with, on January 3rd, okay, I don't have that in front of me, but that's how the letter begins. On January 3rd, it was my privilege as Speaker to invite you to deliver the State of the Union Address January 29th.
Right.
Okay, that's pretty much all I need to know.
So today he responded to the letter of January 3rd, not January 16th.
And then January 16th, she said, not so much. You know, people are out of work. Let's figure it out later. You might want to just turn it in writing.
And then she sent the letter today after he responded to the first letter, not the second, saying, we won't be able to entertain you. We won't pass the resolution allowing you to speak.
Right. So I'm not exactly sure what the protocol there is, Steve.
Well, it's in her house.
I know that, but she technically invited him.
Right.
I mean, if this is what it is, she's invited, he's accepted. Now, I don't know if there's some legislation or procedural thing that has to take place on the floor of the house.
It's really beside the point. I'm sure, of course, she has the power authority to uninvite him, but it's just, It's just, the whole thing's ridiculous.
It's like, hey, we're having a three-year-old's birthday party. Oh, wait, nobody's there at the catering company, so we're going to cancel it.
Producer Olive says we do have actual audio of the negotiation between the president and the House Speaker. We'll go back to that as we get more details.
Maybe first birthday party then.
The other story is the Michael Cohen story. You know, everyone was drooling over his testimony, which was set for February 7th, and he now says he won't do that because his, I think it's his wife feels threatened if she were to go up on the Hill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He goes to prison in early March.
For 3 years.
So I don't know that he'd be excused from prison to testify or exactly what's going to come of that.
Yeah, that was the scrolling headline today, that Cohen feels threatened. I'm not too worried about Cohen. I mean, you know, I think that guy has an insight. He was the president's attorney. He coordinated the payments to two women. I mean, he's a real player, and his truth is relevant, but he's so full of crap. I don't know what. I can't believe that guy.
He's not a reliable narrator, you're saying?
Exactly. Elif, can we go back to the negotiations between Nancy Pelosi and President Trump? When you have the audio, go ahead and hit play. Sorry. Sorry, America. Sorry. Speaker Pelosi's letter to the president, dated the 16th, not the 3rd, says, the U.S. Secret Service and the Department of Homeland Security have not been funded for 26 days now, with critical departments hamstrung by furloughs. My intonation. Sadly, given the security concerns, and unless government reopens this week, I suggest that we work together to determine another substitute date after the government has reopened for this address, or for you to consider delivering your State of the Union address in writing to the Congress on January 29th. Thank you for your attention to this matter. P.S. How about you just tweet it out with a bunch of typos and exclamation points? Love, Nance. Love the speaker. So that's what it's come to, boys and girls. A week from tonight, the president, I'm going to make a bet, is going to deliver a State of the Union address.
Sure, and he's going to do it. I mean, I think this is a mistake on her part. He's going to be, you know, it's a race to the bottom. Who seems smaller?
Yeah.
And right now, I think she's winning.
She's looking punier.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like the fact that she rescinded the invitation to begin with.
You know, you could have gotten some points out of that, but, you know, if he refused to accept the rescission, then you say reluctantly, okay, we'll do our best and we'll have you here, I think.
I didn't think he was going to storm the gate, though, because remember, his tit for tat was, I got to stop using that expression when I'm talking about the two of them, but so his response was going to be not, remember, his initial response was not, no, I'm still going to show up. I'm going to respond only to the first letter of the third. His response was, well, then you don't get to fly on a government plane to that trip to Afghanistan and Brussels.
Right. And by the way, she was going to a war zone, Afghanistan.
I know that. I don't know how appropriate his response was. It seemed childish and petty, particularly since she wasn't going to Hawaii. You know, I believe that going to Afghanistan on a government plane is doing the people's work, and he wasn't going to allow her to do that. He said, you can fly coach if you want. But I thought that was the end of it. But now I don't know why he frankly is so, I mean, I know he loves the majesty of speaking before the House and everybody rising, and will the Supreme Court justices and the Joint Chiefs be there as they often are?
You know, I think all bets are off right now, John.
That's what I thought. Maybe it's a race to the bottom. Maybe the Democrats don't show up then. You know, they can say, you want the place? Fine. It's like an Airbnb for you tonight. You can have it for all you want. But it'll just be Republicans.
Just put down a security deposit. We want it clean the way you left it to you.
Take the sheets off the mattresses. Just put them in the little hamper in the closet there. We'll be good to go.
I don't know.
Maybe that's the news click is, you know.
What?
I don't know. Who's worse? Who's more awesome? Or who's more awful? LF, do we have more audio from the Speaker of the House? The negotiations are continuing. This is the President of the United States speaking with the Speaker of the House of Representatives. They're in a closed-door meeting in Washington, D.C. Let's go there live. Matt Bubala, who hosts a weekend show here at WGN Radio, has called in. Hello, former producer and longtime friend of mine, Matt.
Hey, John Williams. How are you?
What do you want to say?
Well, I think that if you really think about this, it's this one-upsmanship back and forth. But if you were Speaker Pelosi, why do you give him the floor for however long he wants to say whatever he wants, and then you have no response? Nobody ever watches the Democratic response afterwards or the Republican response, depending on who it is. Nobody sees that. All they see is this powerful in front of everybody with your people cheering and all the memes that will come out of her looking all crabby in the background. Why should she give him that? I think it's,
because she's supposed to be the steward of the House of Representatives.
It's not her house. It's our house.
Come on,
and
Matthew.
You put it this way, Bubala. Who do you think is higher or lower right now?
Wait a minute. Do you guys think it's important that he gets this opportunity to speak? This is important right now that he speaks to the nation?
We'll answer
that.
Do we need an update? We're responding to the letter of the third right now, Matt. Do you think, who do you think is behaving better, the president by demanding to speak to the American people, as has happened in modern times from the floor of the House, or the speaker denying him that opportunity? Who's behaving better? Behaving worse?
Neither of them are acting on the up and up, and she is lowering herself to his level.
Who's higher or lower?
There's no higher or lower in this. He just asked for airtime a couple of weeks ago to declare a national, that we have this humanitarian crisis at the border that is really, it's a political thing. They're playing politics with each other.
It's not her living room, Matt. It's the House of Representatives of the United States.
That she is the leader of and makes the decision. It's not his White House. He's the guy we elected. You could say this about, 535 different people out there and him. But we elected them, or whoever elected them, and then they do what they do. She's the leader of the House. She's the one that rescinds makes the invitation. They have to do the joint resolution to bring him there. So they have that. He's the one that can declare a national emergency if he deems so and can start building the wall. I mean, they all have their different roles to play. Listen, the State of the Union, let's face it, it's not like, back in the 40s, we need this, so everybody's getting the information out. We hear from all of these people all of the time. It's not like we're going to go wake up the next day and go, my God, we didn't have that State of the Union. Now I don't know what's going on. How will we ever find out?
All of a sudden, we're in Pearl Harbor.
No, but I think that's it. I think the next morning we wake up and we say, here's how disintegrated our government is. At some point, somebody's got to stop the recession.
There used to be a point when we would wake up the next morning and say, no matter how much we fought, how much we disagreed on, we all were able to come together in one room, cabinet secretaries, joint chiefs,
and that's a bridge that she can start to build next Wednesday night by allowing him in there. Even though their differences are great, this premise,
we're still one country.
This premise that it's a security issue or it's to do with the furloughed workers and its attacks on them is crap. It's just a political maneuver on her part. It's her trying to make him look bad, and now she looks worse.
Wow, I can't believe you guys are going this hard one way on this. I think that they all look bad, and it's all a political maneuver.
Oh, come on, Matt. That's not fair.
Seriously?
Are you driving? Is your car moving?
Matt, do you think that I'm saying that the president is behaving well? Elif, do you want me to go back to the negotiations between the speaker and the president? That's what we've got here. This is an opportunity for the speaker to at least step up and act like, I don't know, a 7-year-old instead of a 1-year-old.
How well has that worked out for them so far? How's Merrick Garland doing on that Supreme Court, John?
Let's go to the exclusive negotiations between the president and the House Speaker. There we are. All right, so when are you on next, Matt Bubala?
I'll be on this Friday night. It's going to be negative 10. Do you think I should just leave the car running for the entire 4 hours, or how should I play that?
What time
are you? I'm just going to let it run.
I'm going to call in. What time should I call in on your show Friday night?
I'm on 1 a.m. until 5 a.m.
on Saturday.
I want you to call in about 2:37. Got a window right there.
It's a really good show, and if you don't hear it live, we podcast these shows, you know.
We do.
Can find it at WGNradio.com. All right. Well, Matt, it's a real pleasure to hear you, and thank you for
real pleasure to be heard. Thank you for taking my call. I do appreciate it. I miss you, too.
Yeah, that's our buddy Matt.
Bye, Matt.
God bless him, but I just can't. Look, it's... This is painful for all of us. And the best case scenario right now is Matt's right. You just got poor Nancy sitting there in the background, not standing with... I mean, can you... It's tough on a good year when the opposite party person is sitting on the president's shoulder. Can you imagine what it would be like this year? Maybe she doesn't take that seat. Maybe she boycotts it herself. She doesn't have to be there. They could... Just, you know, put a doll or leave it empty or do whatever it is they want to do. It's not going to be a good night. I'm not looking forward to it. But as a measure of decorum, I think she should offer him the floor. I could be wrong. Remember, every time you say, well, I just can't believe this. I just can't believe this. This is crazy. You have to put some money in the bucket. There's my 5 cents for the Steve Bertrand Kids College Fund. Can you believe these people? And then you go... You have to put the money in. Producer Matt, now host Matt Bubala, called in and disagreed with my position on what the Speaker of the House should do. The president has said, I'm showing up, and she said, oh, you know you're not. That's where we are today. Our texts include these. John, Matt Bubala is right. DJT needs to back off. 630 says, I agree with Matt. You and Steve are wrong on this one. Oh, I'm glad they included Steve in that. 708, John, it's my house. He's not welcome. It's his emergency, so let him fix it. John, they've tried to be civil with him, and he fights dirty and has no respect for them. It's about time to get on his level. It's never time. Remember Michelle Obama? They go low. 708 says he doesn't deserve to make a State of the Union. I applaud Pelosi. Listen to all of you people. 847, Mr. Trump is an expert at broken written contracts. He's left a long trail of them. Now he knows what it feels like to have it done to him. And on you all go. I thought I'd have a parade behind me.
No. Did you?
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah. That's why I never really...
I love a parade.
What were you saying, Steve?
I try never to agree with you because you never have a parade behind you, but...
Well, put it this way. I'm right. Tell me where I go off the rails. Both sides are behaving badly.
True.
Donald Trump is the president of the United States, and his behavior is beneath the dignity of most presidents.
I think I would agree with that.
I think maybe I've already gotten off the rail for some people. But I'm trying to acknowledge that I think the president has failed us here as a matter of civics or civility. Now, should Nancy Pelosi... fight fire with fire. I think that's what's happening here.
She had a chance to elevate it. I think she had a chance. Either what, she's going to try to score points, right?
I wish she wouldn't.
I think she had a chance to score by aiming up rather than down, and she aimed down.
Okay. You and I are on the same page on that. Steve, do you agree with me that if the president is adamant about this, rather than finding another location, the speaker... doesn't want him in, so he could do it at the Senate. He could do it from the Rose Garden. He could do it from Mar-a-Lago. He could do it from anywhere, right? So, but he's adamant that he goes to the House. Now, what should she do?
Well, you know, look, it's not a big thing to be adamant about. That's where the State of the Union is delivered. And her excuse at first was that it was a security concern.
Yeah.
The head of those security agencies who worked directly for the president said it wasn't a security concern.
So you're with me. She should concede. I mean, and she doesn't have to like it, but that gambit didn't play out. She has the... That's a half an agreement.
Well, I don't want to get too in... I mean, people make up their own mind, but it just seems like she misplayed this.
David Lazarus writes for the Los Angeles Times. He's a business columnist. He has an interesting piece about why your glasses cost what they cost. They should not. We'll say hi to him. And by the way, this is the last call on this. I've got another topic about the cost of glasses from a really interesting article in the LA Times the other day. Michelle, you're our last call. Go ahead. You're on the air.
I just wanted to say I caught it at the last part where the producer got up, kind of a little bit upset. I just think it doesn't matter whose house, where, you know, what house. It matters more not who's right, who's wrong. It matters more that they value the relationship more than they do their egos. And between Pelosi and Trump, I don't think there's any relationship there. I think there's more egos than anything. And that is going to be a tit for tat for a long time.
Was it John Kerry this week who said the president should step down? He should resign, like that's going to happen. But I think that should be Nancy's co-offer. She'll say, if you'll resign, Mr. President, I will too. But their egos are such that neither of them will concede an inch, including an inch of floor space in the House. It's nice of you to call. Thanks for listening, Michelle.
Thanks.
Nancy doesn't listen. Nancy's not under federal investigation, by the way. I mean, I don't think that's a fair trade.
We'll keep you posted, but that was the latest wrinkle on that story today.
As far as we know, unless there's an alderman wearing a wire.
We do have, this is exclusive audio now. Here is Speaker Nancy Pelosi negotiating floor space with President Donald Trump. Those negotiations are ongoing. David Lazarus in the LA Times has an article that says, why are glasses so expensive? The eyewear industry prefers to keep that blurry. And then he said that he talked to somebody whose glasses, by the time the guy got out the door, cost $800, which is making me feel good about my recent $500 purchase. Writes Lazarus, why are these things so damn expensive? And his answer is this, because no one is doing anything to prevent a near monopolistic $100 billion industry from shamelessly abusing its market power. He writes, prescription eyewear represents perhaps the biggest single mass market consumer ripoff to be found. Here's a great line. The bottom line is, you're paying a markup on glasses that would make a luxury car dealer blush. You know how much the cost of the frames, the true cost of those acetate frames is? He says, $10. On average, you're paying $231. David Lazarus joins us, I guess, from L.A. David, you're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
You in Los Angeles, are you, sir?
Big time.
How is it out there right now?
Well, it's, you know, it's like Arctic conditions because it must be in the high 60s today. So we're all kind of bundled up, and I appreciate the nation's sympathy. But, you know, other than that, we're good. We're going to hang in. We're going to persevere.
I'm going to let you enjoy that without getting into a disagreement with you. But thank you. So enjoy that. Enjoy your weather. Enjoy Los Angeles.
Thank you very much.
I set you up on that. What an interesting piece. Was it literally your friend's experience that set you off down this why do glasses cost so much road?
It prompted me to go at it at this moment, but it's not as though I haven't had the same experience myself, because I wear glasses, and I must have spent thousands and thousands of dollars over the years. And, you know, for a product that you're going to wear in the middle of your face, let's face it, vanity is often going to be a key factor. So I don't mind saying that I buy designer frames, and also I've got a prescription that has lots of bells and whistles involved, from the progressive no line to the coating to the prisms and all the rest. And so I, too, have been facing glasses charges that can run $600, $700, $800, again validating your $500 decision, and I wanted to look into why this is happening.
Do you have vision insurance? Is that out of pocket for you, $500, $600 with insurance?
With insurance, it actually does climb up that much now that I'm looking at it, because the insurance will address the frames, it'll address much of the lens, but it doesn't address a lot of the bells and whistles. So if you're somebody like me who wants to get a lot of premium add-ons because you need them, then you're going to be paying out of pocket for that.
Right. I mean, that's exactly where I am, and I think a lot of people are. I don't think that having one pair of glasses on your face to see at a distance and close is a premium. That should be, that's a need, that's a necessity, that's not a luxury.
And that's one of the things that really got me going here is we're not talking about Yeezy sneakers here. We're not talking about other designer goods that, you know, it's discretionary income. We're talking about health care. pure and simple. Now, for the frames, yeah, okay, fine. It's whatever the market will bear. But when it comes to lenses, many of us could not do our jobs without corrective lenses. So this is healthcare pure and simple. And when we're looking at 1,000% markups on both the frames and the lenses, which we are, well, why isn't there the same level of outrage that we saw when it came to, say, EpiPens, where people were going, oh, my God, you're talking about, you know, sick kids, and you're having these huge markups. How dare you? How immoral is that? Well, now let's look at glasses. 126 million American adults are wearing glasses. Extrapolate that globally, and you're into the billions. How is it that this industry can say with a straight face, oh, yeah, we're charging fair value? No, whatever R&D costs they had have been amortized long ago, and in reality what we're talking about are people buying three pieces of plastic and a couple of bits of metal at a 10 or 20 times markup. That is egregious.
You know who sells plastic and metal and they figured out how to cut into the big guys is the razor blade business. Now you've got Dollar Shave Club and Harry's, and they say, you know, you don't have to pay $18 for razors from Gillette. You could do it for a dollar. Not the same quality, but certainly competitive. Why hasn't the free market cut into this and made them as attractive but much more affordable?
It's a great question, and I think anybody who's looked at, say, Warby Parker, which is based out of New York, will say, okay, well, this is a guy who's figured it out. These guys are selling nice-looking glasses at a fraction of the cost of the others, but they still have the big markup, and also they limit your choice. That's how they have pulled this off. I think the reality, however, is not a lot of players want to compete against a behemoth this big, and what I'm talking about here is a company called Essilor Luxottica. Used to be two companies, but they merged together last fall. And if you've got designer frames, you're a Luxottica customer. They control or own such designer brands as Armani, Brooks Brothers, Oakley, Oliver Peoples, Ray-Ban, on and on and on. That's Luxottica. They basically own every designer brand. And then on the other side of the fence, you got Essilor, which owns, well, lenses. They're the largest maker of prescription lenses, the largest maker of contact lenses. You put them together, and suddenly they cast a long shadow over the optics business. And then it gets even worse, because Luxottica, and now Essilor Luxottica, well, they own LensCrafter. So you go into LensCrafter, and you get presented with a whole bunch of frames under different names. Turns out you're dealing with just one company. And then when you use your EyeMed insurance, the second largest optical insurance in the country, guess what? Luxottica owns them as well. So they are effectively paying themselves for you to have chosen from brands limited to their own brands at a retail outlet that they also control. How did we get there?
LensCrafters, Pearle Vision, Sears Optical, Sunglass Hut, and Target Optical, all of those are owned by this company as well.
Indeed, and which also gives you a sense of how limited your choices are. So when the question arises, why don't more people try to compete? Well, it's like a little phone company trying to go up against AT&T. It's difficult. And in the case of AT&T, that drew regulatory attention, and it does from time to time, and as does healthcare. And yet, for some reason, glasses, we just give that a pass. We just let that slide. And the closer you look at this marketplace, the more you realize that consumers have precious little choice, they have precious little ability to exercise their market power, and what we're looking at are ripoffs.
Somebody just pointed out to me, I got a text from a listener, they said last week tonight with John Oliver, he was talking about the eyeglass monopoly industry. I'll bet they were feeding off of your piece here. Is this company that you're talking about, Luxottica, are they? Is that an American company? Aren't there anti-monopolistic statutes that they have to get around?
Afraid not. Luxottica is based in Italy. Essilor is based in France. The parent company, Essilor Luxottica, based in France with the subsidiaries all over the world. The simple fact is that in America, we're keen, especially on healthcare matters, to allow the marketplace to work its magic. The reality is the marketplace doesn't work its magic. It allows companies to charge whatever the market will bear. And in this case, when you've got no viable competitors, you've got a marketplace that is basically rigged against the consumer, and the fact that they're looking at these 1,000% markups should tell us that this has been going on for a long time, and people have just grown inured to it. Now, are there some choices? Yes, there are. A lot of readers have been saying, ooh, look at Zenni Optical. These guys are good, and they are. Or if you want a brick-and-mortar experience, go to Costco, because they also have cheaper prices, and they do. But I think the real turning point here is going to be in the same way that we gradually became accustomed to the idea of buying shoes online, for example, or buying pants. Well, there was a time when none of us could have imagined doing that without trying it on first, and then we figured out, oh, guess what? It's pretty good. We can get away with this. I think gradually we're going to be seeing more and more people feeling comfortable with buying frames and especially lenses online, and that is going to turn the market upside down.
Yeah, I guess that's it because, I've shopped Warby Parker before. I didn't shop Warby Parker last week because they're not in my network. Maybe I should have gone with them without the insurance because in-network... maybe dealing with one of these companies you're describing, I just paid more money than I thought I was going to have to pay. But a lot of people are pointing out Zenni to me and Costco. And I suppose it's a vanity point too, right? If what they have you don't like the look of, and these other places have bigger inventory and you do like the look of it, I think for $300, some of us are saying, I'm willing to spend $300 on how I look for the next few years, you know?
I think that's true. For a follow-up column, what I'm doing now is running the Pepsi Challenge. I had a pair of lenses put into a pair of old frames, and then I also found a company here in L.A., one of the very few, that will allow you to send in a pair of old frames, and they'll put new lenses into them. Oh. Zenni won't do that, for example. And I'm going to see what comes of it. The ones I got from my optometrist, I liked, you know, and if I didn't like them, well, we're right there. I could have done something about it. And now I'm going to try sending in these frames. In fact, I just cut the deal this morning to get the new lenses that I've purchased online, which I've never done before, and we'll see what those glasses end up looking like.
815 just texted, good topic, John, regarding the eyeglasses. Try hearing aids next, another hidden monopoly. Well, there's more work for you to do down the road, my friend. I don't know about that, but I know those are expensive. They're remarkable for what they can do for people these days. And I think people do that. They say, hey, I've got to hear. I'm willing to pay whatever the market is going to charge.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot. In fact, I've written about hearing aids before, and it's the same deal. You have only a handful of players that are selling things under different brands. And once again, I'm going to say, this is healthcare. And when it comes to healthcare, the marketplace does not work its magic. It needs some parental supervision, and I think we need more of that, not just for glasses and hearing aids, but straight across the board.
I'll just read one other text, and I'm not telling you all anything you don't know. John, I purchased from Costco. They said they don't do repairs. They were happy to try and sell me a new pair, but good luck to me on that. Fair enough. Well, this is interesting reading. So when's the follow-up going to come our way then? When do we see this next piece, David?
It's going to take a couple of weeks because I wanted to wait until I get those new lenses put into my frames,
right.
And that should happen shortly, but that seems like a good jumping off point to talk about Zenni, to talk about Costco, and also to get, you know, fair is fair, the viewpoint from optometrists who have been contacting me and saying, you don't know what the heck you're talking about, and I'm guessing they're going to kind of take the position of movie theater owners defending the popcorn sales.
Well, now let's keep an open mind. The article I read was dated January 22nd. David Lazarus, why are glasses so expensive? The eyewear industry prefers to keep that blurry in the Los Angeles Times. You can look it up right now. Nice to talk to you, David. Listen, you're fun. Let's visit again down the road someday, all right?
Anytime.
Appreciate your time and appreciate your writing. I'm reading a text from Lou Manfredini. Let me just see if I can find it here for you. We don't call him Mr. Fix-It for nothing. Lou Manfredini, Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. on WGN. No, it's at 6 a.m. It's hard to keep track of his schedule. John, I'm starting an eyeglass company. Any frame, $99, just like Earl Scheib auto painting. Thank you, Lou. Lou went to Warby Parker. And you were around 300, though, right, Lou? It's 254. Your texts include this. John, funeral homes and caskets are also another topic that needs to be looked at for the pricing we pay. Talk about taking advantage of people in a time of grief. There's two sides to that story, but yeah, there's that. You looking to secure financing on a new home or refi the one you've got? Then you need to call Team Hochberg. And here's the big news from Team Hochberg. To provide listeners additional financing options and substantially lower rates, Team Hochberg is now originating loans at a company called Homeside Lending. Homeside Lending. Team Huckberg's Chicago-based loan officers and in-house underwriters will enable them to approve loans within 30 days. Within days, actually, it says here, I don't have a number. Within days of receiving a complete file from the borrowers. In the coming weeks, David will highlight Homeside's proprietary new loan programs like cash-out refinances up to 95% of the value of your home. Team Hochberg's new number is 855-56-DAVID, or visit their new website, 56david.com. That's 56david.com, or call 855-56-DAVID. What else should I tell you? Homeside Financial. Homeside Financial is an equal housing lender. Illinois residential mortgage licensee MB-676-1019. The NMLS ID number is 1124061. Rokan, Anna DeVlantis are just down the hall. They're in fancy Studio A. What's coming up with them? WGN King John on social media. I'm in Studio D. Rokan, Anna DeVlantis are in Studio A. I was going to go there, but they've rescinded the invitation.
No, we have not done that.
So now I will not be able to go into their studio.
When you start acting a little bit nicer and better, we'll consider it.
Well, then maybe you should act a little bit nicer and better.
No, I am, but what about
you? Yeah.
This is exactly the conversation going on in the White House, and the Speaker of the House is... telephone call right now. No, you are.
So who's lower? Matt Bala called in, and he and I got into a disagreement about whose behavior is worse. Whose behavior is worse today, right now?
I thought this whole play to not have the president go to the House chamber and give his State of the Union speech, I didn't like it because I thought Democrats are doing now... They're continuing to tear apart at the fabric of everything that Americans expect to see and feel and hear about America. And I don't like the idea of that. And I know I get the politicking here. I think the president is, you know, he's doubling down on a bet that he made against himself to build this wall and to have Mexico pay for it. Well, Mexico's not going to pay for it, and he wants to build the wall. He wants to be able to claim in 2020 that he built a wall. Right, that he's done something here.
But you don't not invite him to the State of the Union.
I don't.
Come on. That's what presidents do. And we all know a lot of that's just
besides,
beat up on Democrats and it's going to be, you know, somewhat ugly. But that's what that's his thing.
And
he gets his chance.
If you gave him the $5 billion, he'd get 200 miles of wall. He still wouldn't have his wall.